podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Finally, a bed that senses snoring and automatically responds. Meet the Ergo Smart Base from Tempur-Pedic, our first system that detects snoring, then automatically adjusts by raising the bed. And now, during the Tempur-Pedic Summer of Sleep, all Tempur-Pedic mattresses are on sale, with savings up to $500 on adjustable sets. Get your best sleep, all night, every night. Learn more at Tempur-Pedic.com.
Time to fire up the grill.
Time to go to Total Wine and find the perfect flavor to pair with those burgers.
Ooh, I love their beer cooler.
You love their prices even more.
Wondrous selection, helpful guides, ridiculously low prices. Total Wine and more.
You got caught there.
That was Pete.
Who's hosting this?
You were. You
were. I thought Gav was.
No, not my gig.
Good evening. Welcome along to the Monday, the forum. It's great to have you back in the house. It's a Monday evening. It's not been a great day in Ireland. If you hear some strange kid sounds in the background, it is, of course, Pete's.
Pete's young one
is up eating jigsaws at the moment, right? So that's the main thing. So Pete, just tell her if she starts putting on Peppa Pig, then that's
Peppa Pig.
On this side, of course, is Andy Young. Andy Young, give us a how are you keeping, buddy?
All good. Looking forward to the show.
Do you not have your lighting ring on tonight?
No. Is the lighting bad?
It's looking a bit dark now. You're
falling into witness protection there, to be honest.
Yeah, you look a bit ashy.
I'm being held hostage, lads. it was bright out 5 minutes ago, and the room was a lot brighter.
That's what happens at
night time.
Then down below me, of course, is Gav Doyle. Gav, good evening.
Good evening. How are you, my man?
So you're coming in from your bunker.
Yeah, I am. Yeah. Fucking just.
What's wrong with you, Gav?
I'm just apparently stuck in this fucking chair looking at this laptop, to be honest. And it's just non-stop. And I've made loads of plans, and I'm looking at the plans going, that's a lot of fucking work. And
you won't know yourself when you...
I've committed to it now, so there's no going back.
You won't know yourself when you get your new pewter.
Yeah, my new pewter is it's 4 weeks away. And when it's
4 weeks away.
I'll take loads of pictures. I'm going to put them on Instagram.
And, can't wait to see
loads of lovely likes.
I'm looking forward to it.
Right, to the people that's listening to the show that are there in the chats and the comment lines and the whole lot, good evening to you all. We want your comments, we want your opinions, we want everything, right? So I can laugh at them as we go along and obviously maybe agree with some of them and disagree with other ones. The best ones we might read out. I tend to forget about it, so it's just I'll try it tonight. And then, of course, we're going to talk about our four topics tonight. First one is on SOS. Are they going to save our souls or should they go in the bin? Then the second topic is the worst Liverpool signings in the Premier League era. I think there's going to be probably consensus around most of the names, but hopefully we can bring a different take on a few that might be a bit outside the box. Following on from that, we are going to then look at our most underrated players, or some of our most underrated players that we can think of, and see what defines underrated. Basically, Pete just wants to say Phillips is great, and he should be given a contract extension, and I'm just going to rubbish that. And then, of course, we're going to round off with that the Premier League is a big load. The standard in the Premier League is a load of shite, or is it? Or is it just what it actually is? And that's quite normal. We're going to kick off. With a chat around SOS, all things SOS. Today they came out with a statement or an open letter or an open statement or whatever it was, saying that they're going to meet with the LFC hierarchy to see what their responses are to the points that they put forward to them next week. Last week, there'd been a lot of debate, as we know, on the SOS position in terms of what they're looking to do. And Andy, as a result of this, you went off and joined SOS. Am I correct?
You've ruined my whole speech.
That's what you do, Andy.
You've been doing this for a long time now, Andy. This is what I always do.
He's a ruiner. Yeah.
But go on, Andy. You've often enjoyed SOS. But
okay,
you
so look,
your reasons. This might
sound like a bit of a rally call, but so I want to put it on record. Apart from joining, you know, I've no affiliation. You know what I mean? I've never been like, if nobody's asked me to say this, I've never really been like a big advocate of them. I was quite indifferent. But anyway, I've agreed with a lot they've done over the years, and I've disagreed with a lot. I remember I was really put off by them during the 77-pound walkout, which was very wordy. But they were retweeting videos of fans outside the ground, small cohort of fans chanting, get out of our club, you Yank bastards, get out of our club. They're not, you know, I thought that was totally uncalled for, and I thought that was a bit unprofessional of SOS at the time. It's not a positive message to be sending out to people if you're trying to form relations with the owners. But anyway, I joined SOS this week, and I'd encourage others to join. So I'll explain why. We're always talking FSG on here. And I just think that the gap in ambition and the strategy to achieve those ambitions between fans and owners is often very wide. The players and the management and, you know, is what joins us. And if things are going great, they're great owners. You know, if things are going bad, all the blame starts to go around. So I think, like, that gap needs to be bridged, you know, especially with recent things happening. And just to create more awareness through communication. So, like, FSG need to communicate what barriers are standing in their way of achieving the things we all want. And fans need to come up with ways of to be enablers to get over them barriers and help the owners achieve what we all want. And that's, we want trophies, and we want access to the ground. We want the ground to expand. We want great players. We want success. And we need to understand them as much as they need to understand us. Like, that's the reality. Anything else is like a utopian belief in the modern game. So how do we achieve that? And I think it's only through unity. You know, as the flag says, unity is strength, and it's long been the club ethos. So why SOS? Well, they've been the recognised group, you know, over the years. They got the protest together against Hicks and Gillette. They got together, worked hard, they met, they're recognised now at board level, invited into the club. You know, where else do we find a group that's open to all of us, that has all the systems in place, you know, to represent all the fans, you know, voices together? Like, it's a democratic thing. There's an AGM where you vote on topics like anything else. It's not expensive. It's £10 a year. Some people are saying they don't represent me. Well, sorry, like, that's not democracy. You know, there's not one single fan idea that's going to represent us all. You know, so I think we all need to get together and as a united group, meet with the owners, talk to them, and come up with solutions how to move the club forward. And I just think SOS is the best way at the moment, and I just think everybody should join. It's only £10 a year, and we can all get together, and there's going to be, hopefully, if their requests are met, there's going to be someone sitting at the on board level representing us all.
Gav, you've also decided to join. What was your reason for it?
I'm a little bit different to Andy. You know, he's right what he's saying. He's a bit indifferent at times to stuff SOS done. They of course are part of the whole movement against Hicks and Gillette going back over 10 years now. I think I looked at this with SOS, and, you know, I was annoyed over the European Super League stuff, and I wasn't annoyed over it because they done it. No problem. I'm not annoyed over that, because you kind of have to move with the times in football, but it was the way they done it, Phil. And there was no consideration to nobody. There was no consideration. There was no questions asked. You know, if you believe the stories out there, they didn't even consult with, you know, fairly high up people in the club, if you believe some of the stories that come out. So now people will say, you know, they don't represent me and stuff like that. And that's absolutely fine. I've no issues with that. What I would say though is that, you know, for me, the fans are a major stakeholder in this football club. Now, listen, FSG are worth how many billion pounds? How many franchises do they own? You know, they've got investment from Red Bull recently. But the fans are a massive, massive stakeholder in this, because if the fans aren't there, this club isn't there. It's as simple as that. Now, that's a very simplistic way of looking at it, and people will say, well, they just get other ones in. Maybe so, but you lose what the club is. You know, that kind of way. If you were just like going, oh, well, all them millions of fans, they don't like us. We just bring you people in from over here. Doesn't really work for me. So I joined. I did. I'm open about the fact that I joined. And the reason I done so was because I believe that at times, not all the time, but at times, the club should be held to account by the fans in an official way. You know, and the biggest thing for me is that they have made mistakes. And, you know, that's the thing that they're going to have to carry with regards to people that want them out of the club. That you know, that's what they point to. They follow the Detroit, the follow the ticket stuff, you know, and this ESL thing. They've made mistakes. And for me, I think I can't see a negative in fans being a representative of the fans, being at board level. And even to chime in and say, I don't know about that. I don't know, but you might need to do this, you might need to do that. Because I'm of the belief, if Liverpool had to come as a club to their fan base, all right, or a representative of the fans and said, listen, this is the ESL, this is what's going on, this is what's happening with UEFA, they mightn't have been happy about it, but they would have known about it. It wouldn't have been dropped on their doorstep, you know, two or three Sundays ago, wherever it might have been. So when I look at it, as Andy said, it's £10 a year, and it's completely up to anyone if they want to join or not join. But for me, I don't see the negative in having somebody to represent. Now, people would say, oh, they don't represent me. That's absolutely fine. But I don't see the harm in a group of people. And no matter how big it gets, you know, I don't know how many members SOS have, but if that went to thousands or tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands, they all get a vote. They all get a vote on issues that they see within the club, and you can vote on it and you can be part of it. And then your representative goes off and discusses it with the club. I don't see the issue. And they tried something with the liaison officer, Tony Barrett, going back a couple of years ago. And I don't know I haven't heard from Tony Barrett in a long time. Maybe I don't follow him on social media. I don't know. But I think at this stage, the mistakes were made, Phil, but the thing with the ESL, not only has thrown a bad light on Liverpool and five other clubs because the way they went about it, I think more than actually what they were doing. So for me, I joined, I expect to get a vote, to be kept informed. And yeah, like if, yeah, I do understand when people say, like, well, I don't want to join, so why should I join them? Why could that be the only thing? So for me, I don't see the negative in it. And if it helps alleviate in some way the mistakes the owners have made by simply having a fairly straightforward conversation, I'm all for it.
Can I just add something before you make it?
No, because we've just had a 12 and a half minute party political broadcast on behalf of the SOS Brigade.
Well, you decided that because you asked Andy Force and then me.
I just want to make one point, right? That's all. A lot of the mistakes that FSG have made that people see, you know, as their main big mistakes were very avoidable. You know, all it would have taken was a phone call or someone involved there to kind of guide them. You know what I mean? And I think SOS really, you know, speak that. Like you only have to look at some of their causes, you know, ticketing, Liverpool's not for trade, Mark and correct, fan support and food banks. You know, they're doing more than just their avoidance.
Okay, Andy, can I just jump in, because this, as you said, you're just going on with more part of a little broadcast stuff here in terms of what it is, right?
Oh, well, this is what they're doing.
Hang on a second, because
well, hold on,
let me have a right to reply.
I just want to list out
all the things they're going to do, and we know what they're going to do because that's what they put out there on the propaganda all the time. So what you got to remember is that this is
not propaganda. There's food banks at Anfield every week.
Plenty of different viewpoints, and this is the issue, because we can't just have one group saying that this is the viewpoint and that's it. And the problem I have with it, I don't have an issue with fan representation on the board, and I actually think it's a good idea. I also think that SOS have a part to play in, but it's a part to play in it. At the moment, SOS are presenting themselves as the only route for a voice on this board. I've yet to see them come out and say that they want an inclusive representative fan voice on the board. They haven't. They said they wanted their voice on the board.
Hang on a second, Phil, can I just say something? As the only person I reached out to SOS, as you know, last week, after I had a few words with Gav. And Gav, in fairness, put me straight in a few points. I was really appreciative and I admired the passion. But as you know, I take exception in the same way as you do, Phil, to anybody sticking up their hand. I have no problem with anyone saying that they represent something, but I'm not a huge fan of someone saying, I'm against this, I'm against that. I, as somebody, say, okay, if you don't agree with this plan and that plan, you don't agree with FSG's plans to bring us forward as a business, the club forward as a business in modern football, what's your plan? So I wrote them a letter, and it's only a few lines, very simple, and a few of our subscribers will be familiar with these words. I said, look, I'd like to ask you a question, dear Soars, or two, around your proposed appointment to the board of LFC. It's a simple one, really. What is your business strategy?
Attention Social Security and SSI recipients. If you did not receive an economic impact payment for your eligible spouse or dependents, you may need to file a 2020 tax return with the IRS and claim the recovery rebate credit. Go to ssa.gov/EIP to see if you need to file a tax return and if eligible for other refundable tax credits, like the child tax credit. That's ssa.gov/EIP. Produced at U.S. taxpayer expense.
Around how the club not only should be run, but how it should develop and grow. So far, I've seen you argue and obstruct the various business-centered moves the club has attempted to make, but I have not seen you suggest any alternatives as to what you suggest or what you would do. It is very easy to obstruct and say no and to take the moral high ground on football issues. But why is your group qualified to provide solid business consultation to one of the most successful businesses in the sport? I look forward to hearing your view and also your strategy and plan, and also gaining an insight into what your alternative strategies might be and suggestions for the club's development going forward, as I'm sure everyone else is also. Because it's very easy to stick your hand up and say, oh, I don't agree. My problem with the spirit of Shankly is, as well as, to be honest, the presumptuous position of assuming that you know what Bill Shankly's position would be in 2021 when faced with the challenges out there in football, what exactly is your alternative to all of these things that you say no to? I'm with them when it comes to Hillsborough, don't get me wrong, all the actual moral high grounds that should be taken. But when it comes to saying no to business decisions, I prefer an entity to offer an alternative solution, as I'm sure every Liverpool football supporter.
I think that's a ludicrous line to take, because I don't think SOS, and because I want to put my opinion on my thing there, I don't think SOS are in the business of telling FSG how to run the football club.
Then why are they looking for a golden ticket on the board?
No, but again, this, they're two separate issues. I think what they're trying to do is they're trying to have a fan's voice in the room. And I think most of these supporters groups want a control and influence at some point in a club to say yes or no to decisions that are being made in relation to the fans that are out there, and in relation to the fan base.
In the business of football, but Pete, in 2020.
That's not
what they're trying to do at all, Pete. They're not trying to run the club. They're trying to have a voice on. And as I said, the FSG scored major own goals that could have been prevented with a phone call to somebody who has a bit more awareness around. And I actually think it will help them, because there obviously is a gap in their knowledge about how the city thinks. And it's very important that a club which is evolved and developed, and the city of Liverpool will fall for everything. You know what I mean? They fought to have this club where it is today. And the fans and the people of Liverpool deserve better, and they do deserve a voice. And I think when you look at what they're trying to do, they're not trying to be strategists or business people. They just want a voice. And look at the topics I was mentioning: ticketing, fan support and food banks, the rail seating debate, which I think is very real in the future, supporting Sean Cox, like mental health awareness, anti-discrimination, supporting former players. There's former players who are broke. You know what I mean? And sometimes these billionaire owners need reminding of what's actually important. The raw stuff, the stuff that fans think about on a daily basis. Yes, we all want them to bring us forward. I mean, that's what they are the experts in. They are the experts in business strategy. But I think the fan voice is just about what are the important issues to us is as fans.
But Andy, can I, this is my point that I come back to, right? And my issue, like, is not with the idea of a fan representation on the board. I just think the way that they're going about is the wrong way. And here's why. Essentially, if you want fan representation, you have to have representation for the whole fan base on this board. That's the idea of fan representation. Hmm. And I agree that not every fan can have its voice, and you're going to have some levels of it. But the right way of going about this is to go to FSG with a proposal to have a subcommittee of the board that's made up of a number of different voices with regards to the fan base. That includes social media. That includes reporting that's out there in terms of fan media. That includes the groups. Like SOS are heavily, heavily influenced by the local area, and they've been able to bring together other supporters groups that's there. But we have international supporters clubs. We have international supporters groups. They all deserve a voice. And in my mind, what we should be looking for, I don't disagree with the idea of having two seats on the board to represent the voice, but one should be the overseas voice and one should be the local fans' voice, because they don't necessarily represent the pieces. And underneath the board, you have a subcommittee which covers off this representation, so as that the voices of the fans all around the world are heard. It's not just one specific group. So I am not against SOS. I'm not against the fans groups, but I am about having a fair voice that's for everyone. If we're going to say that this is the fans' representation and the fans' voice on the boards, I want something that's more than just one body saying that I'm representing.
So, Phil,
I don't think anyone could disagree with you there, Phil.
I don't think anyone would disagree. But the thing I look at it is, and I get what you're saying. You know, if you had three or four groups and they all came together and voted and put one person forward and there was four of them went forward in a subcommittee, like you say, no issue. But we're talking here as if SOS is closed. It's a closed shop and it's open to nobody. You're talking here as if they have set a target of X amount of members, and when their members are in, they're going to vote and they're going to go off to the club. They go on a mandate given by their members. The membership is open to anybody they want. So if you say, like, if you say to me, they don't represent me. No, they don't. They don't represent you. But they can. They absolutely can. And if you get a lot of like-minded people that want to, that think the same as you, and go into SOS or Spirit of Shankly, and you give your vote, and that vote sways a vote, they are then representing your feelings. Because you go in and they work on their mandate. They had a vote as to who, what he would do with regards to FSG and meeting them. Would he engage or would he not engage? There was an open vote as to what he would do. So what I'm saying is, I'm not against what you're saying with regards to, you know, three or four different supporters groups, whether that be Liverpool-based, European-based, world-based, whatever it might be, coming together and putting a subcommittee together. But we can't go on as if SOS is closed. We can't go on and say, oh, but they're over there making them decisions for me and I don't want it. They're only making them decisions that aren't for you because you weren't in it, but it's not close to you. You know,
Andrew,
I'm not telling everybody that they should join if they want to have a voice. Absolutely not. Like, this channel is for having a voice. YouTube channels, podcasts, wherever it might be, is about having a voice. But what
can
I'm saying
just,
is,
can I just
hold on,
make,
I'm not finished.
I want to get Andy back in because I want to respond directly to that point that you're making. So go on, Andy, and then I want to respond directly to that point about the voice. Go on.
No, sorry. It's not on the point. I just think it's important to address Shane Downs' point while he's there, because he said it should be free a few times now, and it's a closed shop. The sum of it's £10. SOS membership is free to under 18s. I'm sure if you couldn't afford it, SOS would still allow you to join as a member. I'm sure they would. And to run a union, it's not free. You know what I mean? If it's a trade union, you're paying £5 a week, you know what I mean, for your job. This is £10, you know what I mean, to help support the union to do all they do, and that's things like banners, food banks, things around the ground. You know, they have to send their message around. It's not free. There is cost involved, and I just think it's important. Let's not get down the road of calling them scabs. Someone has to fund this. And okay. It's not under 18s because they're free, and it's not going to be people that can't afford it because they'll be allowed to join as well.
Andy, and listen to me. Anyone that wants to join SOS or anyone that believes in the way that they present themselves and the arguments that they're putting, they should absolutely join them. Like £10 is relatively a small amount in modern day society for the vast majority of people, right? So, like, and I don't want people being coming on and saying that this is terrible. I don't think it is. I think I think they're doing a great job in terms of what to do, but I do not agree with them being the only voice that represents the fans. And going back to Gav's point, he is right. But there's so many different channels out there that represents the fans' voice. This here at this moment in time represents fans. There's Red Men. All those other lads, all the other lads that are out there, right? They represent the fans. You have various different supporters groups all over the world. Some are the official supporters clubs. They represent the fans. There's fan representation everywhere, and there has to be a way and a means that if you want to have this, okay. And I'm going to take this. If you take the key issue with the ESL was seen as a closed shop, right? That you couldn't get in, nobody could get in, nobody could get out. Okay. The teams were in there, and if you're in it, you're in it. If you're out, you're out, right? In the same way, SOS argued against the idea of a closed shop, then I can't see them arguing with the idea of having an open ability for different supporters groups or different voices to be present in a fans representation forum that feeds into two representatives on the board, which is they want two representatives as well. I completely agree, but I think one should be to symbolize the overseas fans' voice, and the other should be then for the more local or colloquial fans' voice that sits there. And I think that is the fairest way and fits with their model and fits with their motives. If they if they turn around and say that they're not on for this and it's SOS or nothing, right? Then essentially the SOS are arguing for an ESL type representation inside the Liverpool board, which is a closed shop to only those who join SOS, which I don't think is what their model is about, by the way. I don't think they would be the ones that would stand up and say that this is what they want. I just think there's ways and means to do this that are more open for everyone.
Yeah, I wouldn't be against what you're saying, Phil. I just think at this present moment in time, SOS are long established now. They've all the systems in place. They've built up relationships. They're there, ready to go, ready to be able to pull people forward. They have, as Gav says, they've the ability there to mandate their members, and their members are all over the world. They shouldn't really, like, you know, if everybody joins, they shouldn't really be just representing, you know, LFR, you know what I mean? They be representing people all over Europe, all over the world, Australia, India, China, America, fans from all over the world. That should be the way it is if people were to join, because everybody have an equal voice. No one voice will count as more votes. But if a solution is, does come from FSG and they say, well, we're not really happy with just you, but we want somebody else. Who that is, I don't know. Is there any other group that represents the global fan base better than an open union? I don't know.
There's no limit on how big this can be. There's no limit. So, like, if you like, I think I'd find it difficult to find somebody that would turn to me and say, I'm absolutely fine with everything FSG have ever done. And do you know all that stuff they've done? I'll leave it. It's grand. I'm sure the vast majority of there would go, listen, I'm not happy about that. Now, I'm not talking about, why didn't you have signed fucking Kylian Mbappe? I'm not talking that. I'm talking about your match day experience, the price of tickets, away tickets, whatever it might be in a footballing sense, right? That affects you as a fan, right? Directly. And all I can think is this, for me, I don't see the issue here. Listen, if you want to join, you do. If you don't, you don't. But I just don't see the issue here. It's not like people are being told to go away. If you get 50,000 people in Ireland to sign up to SOS and they all get together and go, listen, this is what we want, right? All the people in Ireland want this. It will go through in SOS. It will go through because that is the mandate that's set. Like, and again, going back to international fans, everybody, I'm an international fan. I don't live in the UK. I don't live in Liverpool. I'm an international fan. And I think instead of me sitting here going, I'm not really happy about that, I'm willing to give the £10 to be on part of something that I can have a vote and it mightn't go my way, it might, but that's democracy. And that's actually somebody set up to go and talk to the club. I'm not asking them to, I'm not asking to financially be financial wizards when it comes. I'm just asking for simple mistakes that could have been avoided. I think,
Problem I have, and the reason I raised the issue I did, particularly with the letter, is because I look at a lot of the business moves that FSG themselves are trying to make. And by the way, and I've said this several times since, I suppose, even speaking closely to Andy, you know, it's I have no problem with what FSG are trying to do. The huge problem is the way, obviously, they've tried the method that they've tried to do. They've looked at it as a business and they've said, this is the way we, including the ESL, this is the way we move the club forward as a business, and people have a problem with that. My problem is, you know, I like football, as Phil says constantly, football is changing and it's going to change. And, you know, at risk of being, you know, the big bad wolf here, something like the ESL is going to come up again in another 2 or 3 years. And I just hope, I just don't want to see an incumbent group sitting on the board with not qualified to say, well, no, we're absolutely not going down that route. And a lot of the key clubs actually do go down that route because we have to evolve football. You know, people said the same kind of things about the Premier League back in 92. You're going to have to evolve. And what all I want to say, hopefully, Spirit of Shankly, it becomes this you know, democratic group where everybody gets to say, but that they involve, maybe the club pays for some sort of business consultancy to come and sit on that board with SOS so as we make the correct business decisions and we just don't stand there in an Ulster says no, you know, stance.
Can I just point out a common myth that's sitting out there and is dominating this conversation? If SOS or any fan group in the Liverpool world was sitting on the board, it wouldn't have made a
Time to fire up the grill.
Time to go to Total Wine and find the perfect flavor to pair with those burgers.
Ooh, I love their beer cooler.
You love their prices even more.
Wondrous selection, helpful guides, ridiculously low prices. Total Wine and more.
Tiny bit of difference to the decision to go into the ESL because this wasn't shared at board level. This wasn't decided at board level and it wasn't decided even in Liverpool. There was a decision taken at ownership level, not board level, to join this. And this has been put out there plenty of times. Kenny Dalglish sits on the board. He wasn't aware of an ESL, right? Mm. There's other members of the board who've come out and said they were not aware of it. And other boards, this was done between the owners and not the boards of the clubs. Because if you get the voice can only be representative if it knows the decisions that are being made ahead of the time the decisions being made. We signed up for this without making a decision on the board because ultimately it's not a democracy. This is not like a PLC where the board makes the decisions. We have an owner. If the owner decides to make the decision, then that the owner decision is made. Mm-hmm. Lads, I we could debate this all night, but I want to get on to the fun bit, which is to see how bad is Naby Keita. No, I want to lead on from the SOS chat to get into some meat and topics. So I want us to discuss who we believe, pound for pound, are the top five worst signings we've made in the Premier League era, right? And I'm going to take us right the way back to 92. We could go back forward in this, but we'll limit it to 1992. And when I say pound for pound, because this is always the type of conversation that sits around who's the best boxer, who's the best striker we had. Let's go the opposite way. Who is the worst, right? Now, I think we can find consensus in some of the names, but I think we're going to struggle when it gets to who's number one, who's number two, who's number three. But after three, I think there's going to be a lot of debate around three and four. And that's why I wanted you all to do it. So, Gav, me and you, we're having a row. I want you to give me your five, right? And then we can debate positions and stuff like that. But give me your five and we'll go with
that. I'm going to be honest with you. I didn't know I had to bring five. I brought it.
Well, it won't be hard to think of five.
But to be honest with you, listen, I tried to look at this and in a certain way, like a lot of people would put it down to money and stuff like that. I just put it down to his shit. You know what I mean? Christian Ziege always gets me the hump. Absolutely does. You know, raved about at Middlesbrough and arrives at Liverpool, ends up at Spurs not long after, and he gives me the hump. Andy Carroll is the one for me. Charlie Adam is in there. Paul Stewart was mentioned there, and Paul Stewart was a real letdown. Konchesky. There's loads of them. But I'm going to be honest with you, Phil. I'm just going straight for this. In my opinion, it's Andy Carroll. I think the whole situation where how he came on the radar, how it was dealt with, why he was signed, how he was signed, and what went on from the time he arrived at Liverpool to the time he left was an absolute disaster. And so Andy Carroll would be absolutely my favorite. What?
What's your other four? I want my top five.
I definitely have Konchesky in there. A fucking disaster. Robbie Keane was a disaster.
He
was a disaster.
Not his fault.
Well, he played for Liverpool and he wasn't very good.
When he was played, he was good.
We get a chance to debate this.
Go on.
But look, there's loads of names you can throw in. If you name me to five, nail me to five. Okay.
I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll let you come back and I'll come back.
Let me come back. But the answer's Andy Carroll.
Okay, right. So Andy, his namesake was Andy Carroll. Are you going for Andy Carroll as your worst signing of all time? And have you got four more for me?
No, I've got a few. You know, there's different levels of worst signings. You know what I mean? You can correlate it to cost and the waste of money. Mm. That's one way. What I always see is players that kind of done damage to the team. You know, who are imposters. And there's nothing worse to me, and nothing buzz my blood worse than watching somebody wear the shirt of the club I love with disrespect. You know, and who conducts himself poorly and doesn't put it in. Farther short, so that's why I look at guys like Konchesky who said some nasty things about the people in Liverpool. Paulson, I think Balotelli's up there. Like, he was disruptive. He was asked to mark our corners and he said he didn't mark our corners, you know, stuff like that. You come to Liverpool and you do what you're told, you know, it's a privilege. It's not an entitlement to come to Liverpool just because you're a good player. You have to have a certain thing about you. I remember Glenn Johnson calling the fans that were giving him a bit of stick, bell ends, at the sideline in the Kilkenny stand. So these players who are above their station, who come, like, you know, players, the biggest probably of all is Elhaj Diouf. To actually see a Liverpool player spit into the fans is absolutely gut-wrenchingly sick, you know. That's for me, they're the worst type of players. And if we ever do sign other players in future like that, I'll feel exactly the same. You shouldn't sign for Liverpool with that sort of personality.
Yeah, Pete, give me your five worst.
Mario Balotelli.
Because
he had the guy has, and probably still has, a world of talent, but he's just an idiot. Let's not spend any more time on him. Salif Joe, who, you know, came off the back of a very, very good World Cup and was, you know, just did nothing for us, seemed like a nice guy. To be honest, Rigobert Song, I don't know if anybody remembers, you know, supposed to be one of the strongest African defenders. Anyone knows me knows that I always, as a kid, look forward to black players signing for Liverpool because it was, you know, it's a big deal for me. Elhaj Diouf, I mean, for the same reasons, Andy, so disappointing. It's one thing to fail at a club, it's another thing to disgrace it and to not understand. I mean, what any of us wouldn't give to make one appearance for Liverpool Football Club. And that man just disgraced everything that it meant to us. Joe Cole, because I thought he was absolutely excellent for Chelsea when he got a chance and just done nothing for us. And I have to say, am I allowed to say his name, Phil, before you do? Because I'll leave him if you don't want me to.
No, go on.
It's the most disappointing signing for us. I mean, I'm anyone that knows me on Twitter or whatever knows how much I give Paul Pogba a roasting and a going over. But we have our own Paul Pogba, and that's Naby Keita. I mean, an injury list longer than any talent that he's got. not just a complete disappointment. It's not even signing. It's not about money. It's about the anticipation. It's about let's wait for them. Let's pay the money now and wait for the year. I've never seen so many false dawns. You know, I don't care. You know how much talent he has. You know, forget about sick note. You know, sometimes it's a mentality. Just the most disappointed I've ever, and that includes all of the aforementioned lads. The most disappointing, and I think what annoys me more is the fan bases. The way the fan base are about. You know, some lads out there would give him a 10-year contract and be happy for him to continue going on the promise that he might do well against Bournemouth, West Ham, and you know, Coventry in the cup. Huge disappointment.
So, right,
I
suggested this topic. Go on, give us your five, and then I'll jump in.
So, honourable mentions to Christian Benteke and Al Hajj Juff for the reasons that the lads have said. Benteke was a disaster.
We're going to be coming back to Benteke because
the talk was that Brendan Rodgers wanted him and would only sign Firmino if he could have Benteke. You know, as somebody else said to me earlier, you know, he was a Hail Mary at 32 million and it was a disaster. Charlie Adam was a signing that, you know, we chased him all around Blackpool and then we missed out on him and then we went back and chased him again. Kenny picked him up at a chipper. Charlie Adam, it was just fucking horrendous to watch playing for Liverpool the vast majority of the time. Balotelli was just a nightmare. And you know what? He was one of those when he arrived, you knew it was a panic. You knew it was, that's all we have and that's what you're getting. And you hoped against hope that, you know, somebody at the club could turn him around and it never happened. And, you know, he was arguing over penalties at the cop end. Do you remember that in Europe?
Yeah.
Stuff like that. Naby Keita is in there simply because of the, Pete says, for me, that's a money one where you look at it and you wait for him for a year and he comes and there has been injuries, but it just hasn't happened for him. And I think he's been a massive disappointment. Not when he's on the pitch, I think he does okay, but it's just a massive disappointment overall in how inconsistent he is at being on the pitch. And that's the biggest thing for me, because I think I always said it, I think he's all the tools to be a fantastic player for Liverpool, but he just can't get on the pitch and play. Aquilani, the same. Very good footballer. Very intelligent footballer, but again, just wasn't around enough. And Andy Carroll is number one, because we sell Torres and we panic and we look around and we sign Andy Carroll, who I think was grounded by Kev Nolan for being bold. And didn't want to play for Liverpool. He had to force him onto a helicopter or something like that. But he turns up. He doesn't suit us. He gets injuries. It just doesn't happen for Andy Carroll. I think, you know, either rather at the time, looking back, you just hold your money for 6 months. Let Suarez do his thing and then look for something big that summer. But Andy Carroll for me is the most disappointing signing we've ever made.
So I put effort into this and it went off and got an inflation linked table of all the Premier League transfers since 96-97 to see where they come in. And it's interesting because my argument here is that Naby Keita is pound for pound the worst signing we've ever made, and by being able to equate how much we spent on him to how much we spent on the others gives you some sort of basis for measuring these up, and then you can bring in what did they actually contribute, right? So I think R. Kumar's just lashed in Steph up there now for a sense check. So Ince in today's money would have been a £38 million signing, right? So when you compare Ince to Naby Keita, who both play in the same position, Kate is winning there. So it's easy to do it down, right? And you could argue that Ince had a better impact on the team because he turned up, played, and did a bit of run around. And
he was captain for a while.
How did you know Ince was 38 million so quickly there?
Because I went through these before we came on air.
He's doing his homework.
All up here, Andy, right?
So they have considered
Ince.
What?
Oh, I love Ince.
He wouldn't be on my radar, really.
No, I thought Ince was. But come here, can I just come back? So I have to say, on a personal level, Keita for me fits all the boxes for worst signing ever, but he doesn't get the top spot, right? Of all the players we've signed, Stuart Downing is the worst fucking player we've ever signed in the history of this fucking club, right? We spent the equivalent of £60 million on Stuart fucking Downing, right? He turned up and provided nothing. Nothing to that. He actually made the team worse. He didn't provide any goals, assists. He was a cowardly little shit. He got tackled every single time. Once he got tackled within the first 5 minutes, you never seen him involved in the game again. He was a master of putting crosses directly into where no Liverpool player absolutely ever existed. Even when Andy Carroll was there, he brought nothing to the team. There's an argument that Benteke would have been better had Downing hung around. He wouldn't have, because Downing would have missed him because he would have been scared of his bollocks. He would have been hiding behind one of the ball boys where he did on the right wing all the time.
He was cool.
60 million heap of shite, right? Honest to God, he's the worst signing we have ever, hands down. The Andy Carroll one. Now, the Andy Carroll one is really interesting because Andy Carroll is effectively inflation indexed our most expensive signing of all time. He's the equivalent of a £94.5 million signing these days, right? That's what we're talking about here. This, if Liverpool were to go out and spend £100 million on a player, we spent £100 million on Andy Carroll. The only thing that offsets that is because we got the equivalent of £135 million back for Fernando Torres in that deal. And we also spent £60 million on the equivalent of what 60 million will be on Luis Suarez. So it's very hard to balance up the Suarez, because you always think of Suarez and Carroll in the same deal, right? And that's what Torres, when he was sold, bought us Carroll and Suarez. And had we spent the 95 million on Suarez and the 60 million on Carroll, nobody would be batting an eyelid. And that's where I find it hard to separate, because it was one deal that covered off the two and we ended what it was, right? So I'm going Downing top. Right.
Cater.
Glenn Johnson is second on my list, right?
What a shout that is.
We signed Glenn Johnson to get us over the line to win a title, right? He was meant to be a difference maker. He had one good season for us. But Glenn Johnson was worth the equivalent of 60 million English pounds, right, in terms of what we signed him for, right? He couldn't defend a crossfield ball to the back post. In the absolute disaster that was Christian Bull the night that we threw away the league in 13-14, Glenn Johnson is toddling down the right-hand side. Him and Skirtle formed the fucking axis of disaster. The two of them, when they played together, was literally the worst axis that we've ever had. And you've had Lovren, you've had all the lads. Phillips and Williams have played there, and they've still looked more competent than those two gobshites ever did in the team. And we spent 57 million on John Glenson not having it. So sadly, I can't deal with this. Right? When you consider what we spent on them, it's just frightening. Now, an honourable mention goes out to Joe Allen, who cost us the equivalent of a £44 million deal. But I'm going with Keita. Keita gets in next because he is 55 million of a big bag of shite, right? Like, literally just awful. Awful.
Ese último McNugget me toca a mí porque soy la mayor.
¿Y eso qué tiene que ver?
Los mayores se respetan.
Eso no existe, ¿cierto, mamá?
Ya, quédense tranquilas. Aquí hay otra cajita de McNuggets.
Respeto, ¿viste?
No hay rivalidad cuando hay McNuggets deal. Hay un deal para cada salida familiar en McDonald's. Compra uno de tus favoritos, como unos McNuggets de 10 piezas, una Big Mac, una Quarter Pounder with Cheese o un Filet-O-Fish y te llevas otro por $1. Por tiempo limitado, precios y participación pueden variar. Válido para un producto de igual o menor valor.
So we wait a year for this fella to arrive. In the season where we needed midfielders and in the season where we needed people to turn up for us, right, particularly expensive players, not only does he go missing, he dials it in games. If you look at what happened in Madrid, he gives up. After 20 minutes in Madrid, he gives up. And it's not the first time that happened. He gave up in Naples in his fourth season when we were playing out there, and it took him off, and then he was back all right for the following weekend. It was awful. He is awful. He doesn't have the guts. And my biggest concern with Keita in terms of him being a flop, I had a prediction that he was going to, of the signings we made that summer, he was going to be a flop. And it was off the back of his last season for Leipzig, where his attitude stank the place out. Stank it out. Right?
He was starting
fights on the pitch. He did nothing. Nothing. For Leipzig, and ended up being dropped and left off the squad in terms of what was there. So when it comes down to it, that's it. Now I'm on to my fifth, and it's because this is like who's
so Naby only gets in a fourth for you.
When I started doing this, this was
I'd say you start going fucking Naby Keita, when you actually looked at them, you went, oh bollocks, I can't. I'm Phil Casey, but I can't go through with this.
I struggled to pull.
Yeah, I know. I'm proud of you.
because I told you, when I started diving into Stuart Downing's career, I got angry. I got physically angry at remembering Stuart Downing as a Liverpool player. I remembered how much I hated him here, right? It just couldn't. When I think back of it, I blanked it. And then I started to remember it. And I actually watched some of the highlights of his games at the time here. And I was so angry. I was screaming at the screen going, what the fuck are you doing?
How could you get away with it?
Yeah,
what about Benny Hill, Markovic?
Well, this is right. So the obvious ones are to go for Benteke because they learned absolutely nothing from the Carroll signing, and they spend the equivalent of 63 million on Benteke as a thing. But yes, Andy, Lazar Markovic as a signing goes, right, is literally up there in the top five. That fella costs the equivalent of 50 million English pounds, right? That's what we're talking about here, right? And as bad as the other lads have been, I see names like Morelles, Acarius, Cheru, all these fellas, Poulsen, right? Poulsen was the equivalent of signing a fella for 12 million quid, right? Like, we're not talking about a big signing here, right? But like, Lazar Markovic, he turns up in his first day of training looking like he was sent in on a student internship.
No, Winston Bogart stuff. It's Winston Bogart stuff.
Torn up and do a bit of cleaning around the gaff or something like that, right?
Yeah.
And then you see him, and you know when he's used, that was when he started, social media started, and you started seeing videos come out. The fella couldn't bend his knees. You could tell that he was never going to make it. He couldn't bend it. You looked at him, and he ran like Benny Hill. Like, that's when I saw Lazar Markovic, and this fella is running like Benny Hill, isn't it?
I remember, like, me, you, and Floody, we probably a little group at this stage, and we all said at the same time, like, I think it was the American tour, and my first glance at him, my jaw was on the floor looking, I was thinking, oh my God, what have we signed? Like, he was running around like Benny Hill, and the three of us must have said almost simultaneously, like, this fucking thing, like, up and down the wing.
I've got two mates signed for TNS on the same day. I won't name them because one of them is still at the club. And they told me 2 years in a row, TNS play Liverpool's academy, the under 23s, every season in the preseason. They don't pronounce what the score is. It's some rule or whatever. But the two years in a row, they played against Markovic. And what the 23, when he was there, the 23s just put him in the middle of the park. And basically, because he has a contract, he's on like 37 grand, but he was on 37 grand a week to play, basically to look after things with the 23s. He stands there, doesn't even wear shin guards, and he just pings it around like a 50-year-old man. Now, apparently his ability is out of this world. He can do whatever he wants with the football. But he doesn't run. He doesn't do anything. He just
He can do whatever he wants. He can do whatever he wants.
47 grand a week.
In the middle of the park against a load of kids and TNS, and he's playing. So, like, basically bringing your dad up to Astro, is it?
Exactly. Your dad. Now, your dad was quality like 40 years ago.
You'd be going, his dad was good in the day. So, like,
when he could run, I'd say he was deadly.
In the middle of the park, King of Balls, oh my God.
And that's what it was like. The Wonder Lads now, in fairness.
I remember one of my mates, his dad was deadly at snooker. Go on.
But that's what it's like. But imagine getting 47 grand a week for that. Yeah, and Mark, it's a reminder of Bogart.
Was he actually deadly at snooker, Gav? I was just like,
no, he was. We used to play down the snooker.
About their dads.
No, you know, like, you know, he was. I've seen him play snooker. He was deadly. And, you know, when you were younger, you know, you'd see him playing snooker and you go, jeez, I can't believe he isn't a pro. He's fucking deadly, that. But, like, clearly he's not. Like, his highest break was probably 50.
Years ago, like, you could pull off any lie about your dad because there was no internet, So, I think I told my mates, like, my dad was a pro golfer, like, but there was no way of finding out he wasn't.
But did you not live near him?
A lot.
But did you have your dad locked away so no one could talk to him?
No, he says he was.
Oh, he was? Okay, right, okay.
He just gave it up. He was too good.
A lot of lads are thrown in random names here. You've got to think about
it. He's got all the fare on toast.
He cleared golf. He cleared that game, so he just gave it up.
Just get into the band business then, like, just to see if you could topple there. Okay, I don't know who was big back then.
Big Tom. Don't try and band.
Jesus. Goes to show you.
I kind of wish now I told people that my dad was a pro golfer, but he gave it up for the warehousing business. I just fancied warehousing, lads.
Freight.
He loved freight.
Maybe Markovic's young fella told Liverpool that he was dead here.
But in serious, in all seriousness,
he's dead in football. He doesn't look a bit like Benny Hill at all.
It's but in fairness, like he turns out a disaster, Markovic. He really does, doesn't he? But I did feel a little bit sorry for him. I'm being honest. He was a young guy coming into England, into a massive club, into a manager who at the time, in fairness, he showed some potential. But I think as it went on, I thought he did. I thought, but he was played out. You were playing him. Rodgers, as it progresses, he's not even treading water. He's sinking, and he's playing him right wing back. He's playing him left wing back. I would have liked to see Markovic not near the first team for the first year he was there. You know, and brought in and kind of very grounded and looked after, and then being given a year. I think he was thrown in too early, and then you had the whole Rodgers stuff that was going on, where he was just all over the bleeding shop.
Yeah, trying things.
But for the money we spent, and I suppose the marker was that didn't Chelsea have an option on him?
Yeah,
didn't Chelsea have an option on it and turn it down? So Chelsea don't turn any of that down. They usually take it and loan you. You know that kind of way.
We physically couldn't give him away. He was offered the clubs. He was offered to Anderlecht for free, and they were like, "No, I'm not. I'm not on them wages. Second of all, hang on, Pete.
I want to say something, right? We're the masters and not being able to sell players as well. Like, we've had Origi sitting on the bench for the best part of 8 years at this stage, right? And we can't get rid of him. We had Karius.
20 million quid.
Karius is being concussed. He's made rap videos out in LA, right? And we couldn't get rid of him. Aquilani, we sent him out in four.
Karius was on his holidays.
Pounds. Yeah.
He's on his holidays. Ben Ebbett says he's surprised Gav didn't say Brendan Rodgers for Liverpool's worst sign. No, I wouldn't go that far with Brendan Rodgers. I'm not a big fan of him. But if you're going to go down that route, it's Roy Hodgson. Sorry,
Andy. You took David's comment off the screen. I actually forgot he was squad number 50.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, what? Like, do you get to pick your squad number
you're
before?
You're never playing. If the rest of the players die...
That's a marker straight away. Like, you know, when my players turn up for a medical, you know, just you could get the doctor, like, just like casually throw it in. So, what number are you thinking of taking? Like, and as soon as it says 50, like, that's it. Panic button, you know, button underneath the table.
You're looking for the cooling off period, aren't you?
Yeah, absolutely. They can't just cancel everything. Get the Portugal or wherever the fuck it's from. Like there's certain things people do like that are dangerous markers. You know what I mean? Like, you know, whatever you ordered in the canteen.
I'll be back
to you
now, boys.
I was in the shops there today, and some fella, right? Never guess what he got in his roll. This is mad. Turkey tuna, right? For a start, turkey and tuna don't go. But then he put pesto, egg, mayonnaise, coleslaw, and tomato onto it.
Vomit on bread, basically. My Jesus.
No, like, that's that. I'd call the guards. I'd shut the door and say, I don't know what he did, but he did something, right? This guy has come in here as brazen as fucking anything, and he's ordered pesto and turkey and tuna, coleslaw, egg, tomato. Arrest that man and just investigate him. Find out what the fuck.
Right. Is there anyone we're missing out? Like, there's been a few shouts about Nigel Clough. Nigel Clough did more for the club than Benteke and Carroll did, right? So that means he can't be included there. Paul Stewart, I would have had a bit of Paul Stewart because he was a huge, big signing at the time, and he was poxy, right?
Well, Phil, hang on a second. Nobody knew what was going on in that fella's head. I mean, I don't know if any of you are privy to what's going on.
That's fair.
But another one that
should be in there.
Sorry, who's talking about there, Pete?
Paul Stewart. Paul Stewart was abused for years and had the balls and bravery to come out and confront it. over the last few months. He's the bravest guy.
Yeah, Pat Moynihan. Yeah. Pat Moynihan. Julian Dix. Julian Dix was swimming around in my head. When we talk about Konchesky and everything, right? Julian Dix, I think, was he a record fee for a defender at the time? I think like something like 3.75 million, when that was a massive amount of money, right? And he turned up and he was 18 stone and he was only 5'6". Like, you know, like this is the
type of signing on fee.
Him and Neil Ruddock were trying to try. They were trying out for the English rugby team at that stage. As front row,
that was around the time we were trying to find a left-footed left back. For some reason, because we'd lost Venison and all that. We were looking for a left-footed left back. Oh, he'll do, and he could put a tackle in. Do you know what I mean?
Go on, Andy. What was
it? Just somebody says, just no empathy there. I think Pete was raising a very valid point about
yeah, but
what about
shout Morientes, that has to be up there. We spent 19 million at the time. Let me check. I'll check what his real world value will be now. Go on, keep talking there. I'll check it.
Yeah, Morientes is obviously a quality player, but these are imposters. They came into Liverpool not thinking Liverpool was a heap, like it was a kip, but didn't give a bollocks, like, you know what I mean? And it's like players like Dix, like they just have absolutely no business playing for Liverpool. Yeah. You know, imposters.
Like Konchesky.
Right, we'll never get to the end of this because we've got two topics left, right? So on this topic and sort of a carry on, Pete, yours is your most underrated players and underrated players, right?
Yep.
Because you want to point out that in your head, Phillips is the greatest underrated player. You said Phillips was the greatest underrated player of all time.
Joe has it in his little black book.
Yeah, it's in there.
What I said was we live in an instant world where everybody, if you're not Virgil van Dijk spraying balls left, right and centre around that millions of degree angles, you know, you're rubbish. I mean, for me, I'll put you this way. I picked out three players to compare both, you know, kind of as standards of excellence in the past and standards of kind of what excellence seems to be now and standards of what other people can get away with saying is excellent. So I looked at Steve Bruce. I looked at Ruben Diaz, and I looked at Harry Maguire. I'm not comparing, before anybody gets carried away, I'm not comparing any of these lads, bar Steve Bruce, to be honest with you, to Nathaniel Phillips. But what I am saying is at 23 years of age, Steve Bruce hadn't played for England, hadn't played for even Norwich. I'm talking about Steve Bruce, hadn't played for Manchester United yet. He was playing for Gillingham in the old tour division. Steve Bruce never played for England, never set the world on fire, wasn't Johnny Lightning when it comes to pace. Now look at Steve Bruce, for example, and I see a lot of similarities in Nat Phillips. And you look at the modern lads, to be honest with you, look at Ruben Diaz, okay. You know, statistically, his tackle success up there at 59%, 14 clean sheets in the 30 appearances he's made for Manchester City this year. His errors leading directly to goals are one, and he scored an own goal. Harry Maguire, 25 appearances in the Premier League for Manchester United, 57% tackle success, 13 clean sheets.
More stats to me, I'm going to coach you.
I know, I'm making a point here. Errors leading the goal.
You're making your point very well, Pete.
Nathaniel Phillips, now I know best he's playing boy. Less games. He's playing less. The best boy. He's played less games than the other two. He's played 16 games, 14 of which have been in the Premier League. But he's got 64% higher than both of the world beaters, Harry Maguire and Ruben Diaz, tackle success, and zero errors leading the goals. I'm not saying that he's the answer and he's the long-term answer, but people...
Simplify your federal agency's technology procurement with Connection Public Sector Solutions. Connection's dedicated account managers, commitment to exceptional customer service, and extensive catalog of federal contracts make IT purchases quick, easy, and affordable. Turn your challenges into opportunities and get rid of your technology pain points with Connection today. Learn more about what's possible with Connection Public Sector Solutions at connection.com/fedcontracts.
Idiots, to be honest with you, who are saying that he's just going to evaporate into thin air come next year. I'm not saying he's going to be fourth choice for us, but I think it'd be foolish to cast him away. I mean, if I'm looking at a centre-half, I want someone to win his aerial battles, check, to win his tackles, check, which he does more effectively than both Maguire and Diaz, and to give his all for Liverpool Football Club. And, you know, I'm not saying he's the assist king. I'm not saying he's going to dribble through players like Ruud Gullit. But right now, he's the fourth choice centre back at a top club. He might need to be with us next year. And according to some lads, yeah, I know, Phil, good point from Keith Luggett. Phil's moaning about stats, and he's just killed it with stats for the last few hours. Mm. We won't mention that. But we had a conversation with someone who knows everything last year.
Different.
And he told us.
Phil was sitting there comparing the players into Bitcoin, for fuck's sake.
We had a conversation last night with someone who told us that Nat Phillips will evaporate into thin air and will be looking to get a game for Derby County. That's not correct. Now, people need to put respect on this guy. You know, it's the same kind of idiot that would have, by the way, written off five or six years ago, Henderson, just because he hasn't got the capabilities that Steven Gerrard has. This fan base is full of idiots. Nat Phillips is not Franco Baresi, but let's be honest. But he's a very good.
This topic says Pete loves Nat Phillips or is it underrated players?
I just think.
You're still talking about Nat Phillips.
No, I just think it's gone. Hang on a second. It's gone too far. If you're not Virgil van Dijk, if you're not fucking Chiellini, all of a sudden you're shy. Nat Phillips. You know, in the 14 Premiership games that he's played for us, we've won 9 of them, and we've kept 7 clean sheets with him. He's done really well. I would consider him to be an excellent centre half.
There's a weird obsession with Phillips and selling him. Why does it have to be like that?
Do you know what I think this is? And I get where you're coming from. We're underrated. I get that. What I think it is that there's a balance around that Phillips. Right, so, and this is the way I kind of look at it. You see people putting his head on Baresi's body and all, right? And look, that's a bit of crack, right?
Because fairness
to him, he's played very well. I think he's very rarely put a foot wrong for me. And like you said, he's not Virgil van Dijk and he's not Joe Gomez because he doesn't have what Virgil van Dijk has and he doesn't have what Joe Gomez has. But when asked to do a job, he's done it. That's absolutely fair. But you do see people going over the top and we're for a bit of laugh most of the time, you know,
Brazen.
But then you see other people and I think what happens with the other people is that they do compare them to the centre-halves that aren't currently playing, which is absolutely fine because he's not as good as them. And then I think there's a bit of panic that, he's not as good as those, but what happens if he continues to play well till the end of the season and we decide he's not bad? Now, to be honest with you, I'm of the opinion that I'd keep him in the squad, but I'd keep him in the squad to the point where he's probably fifth choice centre back. Yeah. And
Can I ask you a question? And I'm aiming this to anybody who's taking the piss out of him. What the fuck has he done wrong?
I don't think he's done anything wrong, but I think if you're honest with yourself, he hasn't done anything wrong and he stood out in a team that has struggled for the last 4 months. And well, I think that's done him well. But what I'm saying is, I'll ask you a question. I don't really see one either. And I keep going back to this. I think the centre-half makeup next season will all depend on what they do with Joe Matip. Because you're definitely going to have Virgil van Dijk. You're most certainly going to have Joe Gomez. If they keep Matip, you're only going to sign one centre-half, which James Pearce and the Athletic are claiming that that's the plan for Liverpool. Because if they keep Matip, they'll sign one more, and that one more will probably be Ibrahimovic Kanate. Okay, and then you're looking at, they won't sign Quebec because obviously they're only signing one, and then you make a decision on Phillips, who's way better than Reece Williams, by the way. But it's all down to Matip for me. But the question I'd ask you, Pete, is that in the squad, I've no issue. But if I was to say to you, we get most of our players back next season and they remain there, do you think Liverpool could succeed in winning a league title or a Champions League with Nat Phillips as centre-back for the majority? But look, that's what it comes down to, Pete. I'm absolutely fine with most likely 38 league games. You're going to have hopefully a run in an FA Cup, a League Cup, a Europa League. There's plenty of games there for him to play and you can rest players. He's not a player I would depend on to go and win trophies with.
We've been embarrassing in the cup competitions over the last. I mean, I know it's a ploy. I know it's tactical. I know it's.
Who fucking cares about cup competitions? Don't ever come on here trying to make an argument that we play.
I'm a Liverpool fan. To be honest, I'm tired of watching.
I'm tired of watching
getting to the final against Manchester City.
I never want to see us play in the FA Cup again.
We have playing competitions.
We don't have to play in the FA Cup.
We will be playing
in the FA Cup.
We'll be going to play in them. We should be a bit more clever with the way we actually treat those cups.
We just had Nat Phillips wankathon there, right? Without bringing in any reality.
Why can't they? Hang on a second.
Did I say Nat Phillips for Ballon d'Or? This is the problem in this fucking world.
You did, and effectively.
Hang on, in this fan base.
No, we didn't.
If you actually are pro someone. Hang on a second. If you're pro someone's place in a squad, all of a sudden you're suggesting for a Ballon d'Or. I don't think, sorry, Gavin, to answer your question, I don't think if all of those players, including if Canati's brought in, if Virgil van Dijk is fit, if even Joe Gomez, who, you know, is prone to a hiccup, to be honest with you, and prone to an error leading to a goal, by the way, is available, I don't think Nat Phillips starts. But I'm sure as hell hope that he's available in the squad, just in case, I don't know, 5 or 6 centre-halves get injured again next year. You never know. People thought, you know, we've 10 players unavailable.
If we have 5 or 6 centre-backs injured next season, then you're writing off another season, right? Our season is written off because we have 3 centre-backs out injured. If we aren't signing 2 centre-backs in the summer and removing Matip, Phillips, Reece Williams from the squad, then we have an issue because we're not improving our squad situation.
But by all means, Reece Williams hasn't.
He runs in trigger that boy. I agree with Phil there.
I can't believe someone who looks fast is so slow.
Yeah.
Like poor Allison, like he was sweeping like that fella in Corlin, you know. he'd with the pace there. Yeah, but let's just put it in context. Nat Phillips is reliable. Should we ever run into an injury crisis like we had again, he's the best of a bunch that come in. If you're talking fifth choice, he's the type of player who you are trying to see out games. How many games have we dropped points in the last 15 minutes? If only we had a couple of decent centre halves and you're ready to bring in Phillips as a third centre back to see out a game. A lot of teams do target us early. I know the league has changed and a lot. We're not getting bullied as much back there, but he's a good player to bring on, defend set pieces and all that. I absolutely think he has a place in our squad. And in certain games, he's very effective.
If we sign Canati, and you have, I'd say that they will sign Quebec as well, and you've got Van Dijk and Gomez, that's your 4 centre-backs. He's not getting a look in it. He's not getting a sniff ahead of any of them.
But you have to look at your own point here, because you've just said, you know, you don't want to ever see us playing the FA Cup. The League Cup interests you a little bit more, maybe, I think, right? And then the Europa League that does, but, you know, given its history, hinders you if you're looking to win a league title. It all depends on Matip. If Matip stays, I don't think you sign Quebec. I genuinely don't, because Matip's not going to hang around, regardless of his injury record, and be told that he's 4 choice behind a 20-year-old guy, and Gomez and Van Dijk and Canate there as well. You know what I mean? But Phil, my thinking on Nat Phillips is dependable, wins his headers, like all the stuff Pete said. But I'm looking at it going, do you know what? Okay, Van Dijk, Gomez, Canate, Kabak for argument's sake, and Phillips, right? I'm literally saying to myself, do you know what? I'm not letting Van Dijk and Gomez go near that game, right? And I'm keeping that fella off as well, and I'll put one of them with Phillips. And he gets 10, 12 games next season in cups that historically now over the last 5 or 6 years with Klopp that we don't really care about. Do you know what I mean?
Can I just finish out the point I was going to make? The problem with Phillips is, this is the Origi point, right? He's probably having his best season he's ever going to have with Liverpool. He's going to reach his maximum transfer value that you can realise from at the end of this. And ultimately, he's never going to become a first-choice centre-back over the players that we have that's there, right? So the best business decision for the club is realise his maximum transfer potential and his transfer value this summer. And you bring through another centre-back, somebody like a Cometio, somebody, another young fella to make up your 5th or 6th place, because this whole thing is a production wheel that's in place. The whole idea of this is to produce players that if they aren't good enough for the club, you realise the value of them when they hit their peak value, so as that you can maximise that and use it to buy better players. There's no point in us. Like, I have not, and by the way, I want to set my point out here. I think Phillips has done incredibly well for us based on his skill set, based on what went on. And I would have long preferred to see him play alongside another centre-back and having Fabinho in the centre midfield for whatever reason, because I just think it's all right. Okay. But like at the same time, I'm not going to come in here and start saying he's underrated and stuff. He's not. He's had plenty of plaudits. He's had the fans support him left, right, and centre since he's come in. And I don't believe he's underrated. When we talk about underrated players, the first player that jumped in my head when we talk about underrated players from the management side would have been Maxi Rodriguez, because I think he was the most underrated player at the management team that was there when he was
he's still playing, believe it or not.
What a legend, right? Then I was thinking of underrated players that, as fans, the fellas that made such a big difference. Yossi Benayoun in Rafa Benitez's team is one of the most underrated players that we've had at this club for the impact he had on that team. The goals he scored. Never forget the goal he scored.
The header in Madrid. Yeah.
Right. Never forget the goal he scored in Portsmouth in the run in 08-09. And we're talking about Momo Sissoko. Sissoko was fantastic for us in the season before Mascherano comes in. And then even the season when his eye gets damaged, he still plays at a good level for the club as well. Mm. They're incredible underrated players. When we look at the run to Istanbul and you look at the lads, Steve Finnan never gets talked about in terms of the best fullbacks we've ever had.
Dependable, yeah.
And he's had one of the best things, that one of the best runs as a fullback we had in this club. Even when Rafa went to replace him all the time, he's one of the most underrated players, but we never discuss him. So that's what I'm saying. Is Phillips ever going to reach that level? And in my opinion, no, he's not, right? I think he's done a great job for us in terms of the season and what was put in front of him, but he's not going to reach that level that we talk about when I look at underrated players and what did they bring to the club.
I think you're right, but I think he goes to a Burnley and replaces James Tarkowski, and people are having conversations about him being worth 30 odd million and moving on from there. I think of a sneaky, because he suits the way they play. Get up there, bang it away, and all of a sudden, you know, people are looking at him when they're looking for a dependable centre-half, when they're sick of the fancy dance making stupid mistakes. Maybe. It's a bit like the lad at Wolves that we let go. There's reasons why we let him go.
I think we let Hoover go because it was part of it.
Cody.
Cody was let go a long time before he ends up in terms of where he is back in the
league. He leaves the club as a midfielder. But I think I go back to it on the balance and stuff. I think the balance on him, I know where you're coming from, Phil, with the, you know, the highest ceiling and what money you can make on him and stuff like that. But with those two centre-backs coming back from massive, massive injuries, you've got, let's presume Matip goes. Let's presume it, because I think he should, because of his injury record. If you sign Konate and you sign Kabak to go in with Virgil van Dijk and Joe Gomez, right? That's a great four. Don't get me wrong. But we had this this year, where it was, oh, Fabinho will be fifth choice. We don't want that. And I'm not saying history will repeat itself, but we have to have more insurance there just in case. I think a Phillips there is a better insurance policy than Fabinho. He might not be a better centre-back than Fabinho, but he's a better insurance within the squad, because what we've talked about all season is we need Fabinho midfield. And that's affected Thiago and knock on to Henderson and whoever else. I think there's a chance, and admittedly, with the value and stuff like that, it's a great point. It's a great point. But I still think there's a chance, if you're looking for some sort of insurance policy against these two lads that come back from massive injuries and you don't know what way they're going to react.
Manage them back in, Gav, like that, you know?
Yeah. Or else Sepp Vandenberg, who's been out on loan, and they obviously rate him because they wouldn't let him go out on loan.
Yeah. And he's done well for Preston.
Yeah, he has done well. He's got positive reports.
He's meant to be a better Ben Davis.
Well, the Ben Davis one is just mad.
You know, it's typical of Klopp, though. Leave somebody there, and then I remember this at the start. I'm not comparing him to Robertson, please. I'm not comparing him to Robertson, but I remember this. Everybody was saying, "What was the point in signing Robertson if you're not going to play him?" And that went on for months.
Right. So, look, I want to wrap up because we've got 50 minutes left, and I think it's time that Gavin, you introduce your topic of the Premier League is shite. Discuss.
I didn't say the Premier League is shite. What I said was, we're having this conversation in our WhatsApp group, and it's come up a couple of times in the podcast over the last couple of months. And admittedly, you know, people will say you feel it's shite because Liverpool have been shite, but I don't.
Sorry, Gav, can I just interrupt you for a second?
Yeah.
Pete, your back and track there sounds like there's going to be a fucking horror movie starts in the background. Listen,
it's the best little boys, and she's over there fast asleep. Look, fast asleep.
There you go. There you go. Job done.
I'm a terrible parent.
But, go on. But the standard, I feel, has dropped. Now, people have argued against me and said, no, I think, you know, it's more competitive because the teams down the bottom have got better. And I don't agree with that whatsoever. You know, I've watched a load of Premier League this year, and I just... Maybe it's the fans not being in grounds. Maybe it's the lack of atmosphere. Maybe it's that pipe noise coming out of the TV because that's what they're doing now. But I genuinely think the standard has gone down. And I think, you know, people are saying these teams have got better. You look at the teams in the league and you look where they are and you look at the points they're on and they're no different. They're no different to any other season for me. You know, you have a team marooned at the bottom there in Sheffield United. You've got two teams that are more or less gone now. I think West Brom might be already gone, but they're going to end up on a similar amount of points to the relegated teams last season. You've got, I think, West Ham are probably the outlier because they're flying high, but the rest up there are more or less as you would see them. And then mid-table is mid-table, which I like. So Newcastle's always have that surge near the end. Southampton do well and fall off, and all those sort of clubs in the middle. So, you know, I think the points total will be lower for the Premier League winning, and it's hard not to be with the last three seasons with us and Man City. But overall, watching it, the experience isn't as good, don't get me wrong, because obvious reasons, but I just think the quality has gone down. And look, people will tell you, look, three of the four are in European finals. I don't think that's a reflection on probably the rest of Europe as well and what they're doing. But, you know, those three teams that are you know, in those competitions are the top three in the league this season. You know, it's not like they've got to Europe, but they're...
At Capella University, education is as smart as the world around us. With the FlexPath format, you can take classes at your own pace, set your own deadlines, and even leverage your previous experience to move faster. Now that's smart. Learn more at capella.edu.
Struggling in the league because the league is much better. I just feel that the standard has gone down, but I'm hoping. And I'm not happy with it. I'm not fucking giving out. You know, it's. I'm just hoping that maybe it is outside circumstances with COVID and stuff like that has caused this.
Teams are running out of steam, Gav, you know. Teams are running out of steam. That's it. We've run out of steam.
Sorry, Pete.
Go ahead, brother. Go ahead.
What defines a poor standard league?
I think like it's, for me when I look at it, I tell you what I kind of gauge on, Andy. I look at the season. Now, I'm not talking about Liverpool have been atrocious for the last 5 months and it's been horrible to watch and we do shows on a fucking 5-6 nights a week, right? But what I'm saying is this season, it was kind of like, we've kind of sleepwalked through it, if you know what I mean. You know, all right, there's no great title race. City have been excellent for probably 60-70% of the season and that's been enough. But the rest of it is kind of, oh, they're crap. That's why they're, you know, so many teams dropping points. Now, people will say they're dropping points because these other teams are better. I don't think it is. I think the levels have come down. I think the top teams have dropped levels to bring them down amongst the lower teams. And I think the points and stuff prove that. What defines it? I think the amount of times that I've got out my seat and watching football in the Premier League this season, and I can't remember many, to be quite honest with you. As I said, it could be just something, you know, it could be just something where it's that lack of fans and even the build up looks crap with fellas standing in empty stadiums trying to talk about how a big important game this is and stuff like that. For me, maybe it is something like that. But when I look at it this season, Andy, I'm being honest with you, I look at it and go, this is fucking boring.
Well, like, okay, I think it's a convenient excuse, and it's something that I find comfort in saying that this is a stupid season. It's a write-off. It means nothing because we're shit. Like, you know what I mean? The football's not enjoyable for one big main reason. I think that's without fans. Fans make it. They even the noise and the, not the fake noise, but the fans make the games and they really, really do add to the product, as if for want of a better word. I don't think the quality in the league has dropped. I think if anything, the lower teams all have really good technical players now, which they have the quality to take points off teams up higher. Now, there was a time, like, you know, you look at teams down towards the end that have taken points off Liverpool, Chelsea, Arsenal have had an atrocious season, but I think that the quality of the league overall has improved year on year. If you look at the points per game, like, you know, in the last 4 or 5 years, there's only been two or three teams every season who've kind of achieved more than 2 points per game. Like, so the standard in terms of competitiveness hasn't really changed. We had a couple of freak seasons, probably three or four seasons in a row where City had mental amount of points and Liverpool had mental amount of points, but they're going to win the league with something that's probably reflects standards this year with 86 or 7 points or whatever it's going to be, which is quite normal. You know, I think Sam Allardyce going down now is a big marker in how what football is now. There's the old guard is gone. You can't just stay in the league with shitball anymore. There's teams fighting for relegation down there who have a lot of quality players who've got them pulled them out of relegation and who've been able to pull points off the top 10. So I don't necessarily agree that that the standard has got lower, but in terms of enjoying the spectacle, it's absolutely bollocks without fans. And I think a big part of it is the overconsumption. There just seems to be football on all the time, and there seems to be just analysis on each game all the time, like every day practically there's football on. Well, you know, a good Saturday I'd describe is when there's loads of games going on. You choose to watch one, you watch them all a match of the day later. Like, that's how football should be. But watching these mundane kind of games with no one on the ground, it's very hard to gauge. But I look at teams like Leeds, they have come up and shown balls, took their beatings, but also done damage themselves by playing football the right way. And it's such a quality there. Look at Wolves and Leeds mid-table and the quality they have, you know.
Yeah, you know what it might be, actually? And look, I'm not disagreeing with, like, what you're saying. Do you know what I think it might be? The quality of player in the league hasn't dropped, but I think Pete touched on something earlier. The amount of games they're being asked to play in a short period of time, from literally from the middle of September, was it we started, and we finished in the middle of May. That, along with the outside factors leading to a drop in intensity, and I think that's where the quality drops.
Yeah, I mean, you're right.
I think that's what it might be, actually, because I'm...
You're right. Go on,
Pete.
No, I just think, to be honest with you, it's more or less business as usual in the Premier League. We only noticed the drop off in standard because we've been so bad, to be honest. And you can't sustain, we've said this before on this show, you can't sustain the level of football, the level of intensity that Liverpool have sustained for 3 years. Everything is in cycles physically, you know. And then obviously with COVID, it was like crashing. Us and the COVID break, especially the way we play, was like a freight train crashing into a brick wall at 200 miles an hour. You know, there's just damage everywhere, lads. And you look at the injuries, it's not coincidence, it's not freak. It's the direct result of that. You know, players, like human beings, we have our body clocks, we have our rhythm. Everyone's physical rhythm is just absolutely destroyed. So we haven't noticed for 3-4 years that this is the standard league, because we've been so far, us and Manchester City have been so far separated for it. Now that we're kind of in with the dregs and praying to hold on to one league leads against the likes of Leeds United and Newcastle United, we're kind of noticing now what the actual standard league is. But when you're 20 and 30 points cleared of some of the dross, you don't tend to notice. Just we're seeing it now because we're involved in it.
You know, for me, the whole league thing is, it's always about the frame. It's your frame of reference. When we were the Arsenal and Spurs in the league, and you weren't thinking this is a shite league, you're just thinking, if we only sign another couple of players, we can easily get 15, 16 more points and be challenging for the league. You look at who's in the top four. You look at who's in the, like, it's still the same three that were there last year. Everyone was saying the league was shite last year, and we were making the counter argument saying it's not that, we're just so much better than everyone else in the league because of the squad and the team that Klopp has assembled. But there was always a question mark, can you maintain this run? And after two record points totals for league winning teams year on year, that had been a long time since it was achieved, because I think City did whatever it was previous to that. There's going to be a drop off. Gavin's point is correct. We've been more or less playing football straight through since June. And I think for fans, it feels worse, because the games are on all the time, right? So my thing on the standard of the league is the standard's the exact same. But when every single match is on the television, and we're not even talking about a highlight reel or something like that, right? When you have to watch torched crap like fucking Burnley against West Brom, Watford against Sheffield Wednesday, whatever it is that's on the Premier, I don't even know who's in the Premier League. Who is in it this year? Like Leeds against Villa, Derby. No, they're not in it. Like just these random teams that you wouldn't normally pay, like you wouldn't watch. If it's on a highlight program, you might watch the goal and then you turn it off after that, right? Like you just go back to this thing. And I don't think that the league is any worse than it was. I think players are probably suffering more from fatigue, but I just don't think it's actually that worse in reality. I just think we are overexposed. Yeah. Fans are overexposed. People are overexposed to football at this stage, right? And they've looked to analyse every single point. So instead of getting your normal weekend view on a Friday, Saturday and Sunday, and you have the analysis that goes on Monday Night Football, you're having the same analysis happen every single day. And the same issues keep coming up every single day.
So it's a fatigue on air part then, really. Yeah,
yeah, I think it's more fatigue on a viewer's part than it is necessarily that the standard has gotten worse in terms of players. Because we're just sick of watching the same. Like, Gav, what's the general feeling that in our group, in every group, when you talk to anyone who's a football fan, I can't wait till the season's over.
Yeah, that's not just the thing with Liverpool because we haven't been playing well. I have spoken to fans of other clubs where they just go, I just need a break from this. Yeah. And I'm wondering where the break comes because we're going to finish up on the 23rd of May, I think, and you're looking at the Euros. When does the Euro start? Middle of June?
I hope it doesn't.
24th of May.
And the middle of June, I nearly took that seriously. The middle of June, and then that's up in the middle of July, and then you're looking at 3 weeks to start a new season, 4 weeks tops, and then you're back at it. And then you know you have to remember, then you're gonna go what, another season, and then another a short break before we get into the whole World Cup and fucking that Christmas. You know that's just madness. But yeah, I'm. Fatigue for us is probably a big issue as well. I'm worried where it goes because, like I said, the Euros, the Copa America is on, the African Nations is due for January. Then you have the World Cup at Christmas, and there's no stopping it. And the fatigue will just for both players and fans. I think it'll wear us down slowly but surely.
The one thing that American sport does well, even when you have these play things that you have games being played every 5 seconds, they all take a break for 3 or 4 months. So the fans actually get that hunger to want to watch the product on the television. Yeah. By not creating a break and not creating a situation where the program stops and you can build up that anticipation and to a crescendo at the end, we just feel like we're in this constant position where we're waiting for the end to happen. Like you think about when we came back after the lockdown, it was we just wanted to get to the end and see what happens from there on out. Now, when the season starts, it's just like, this is fucking terrible. Like, I just want to get to the end.
Exactly. Like, imagine do you not think that's why Sky are at it a little bit in terms of, like, you look at what happened last
I don't watch Sky, mate.
Do you not think that's not why they're... It's almost like they're looking for another drama to distract from the fact that there's too much football on. I mean, I've never witnessed a satellite channel or any channel encourage a bloody riot before. But it was almost like, yes, now we've got something else to entertain the masses with, and... it was almost surreal. It's almost like, do you remember that movie years ago, Tomorrow Never Dies, the James Bond movie?
Yeah, but Sky doesn't do football, Pete. Sky does...
No, Sky Sports. Sorry, apologies. You're right, I should make that distinction. But you know what I'm saying? It's almost like, oh God, so bored of football. Let's see if some of these idiots will go out and kill each other. So that'd be great, you know, and let's encourage it. It was almost like that James Bond movie, Tomorrow Never Dies, create the news to distract people and to bring some other form of it. Like football has become that, I don't know, tiresome and boring. You know, it was almost like, let's have a riot and enjoy ourselves here, you know?
Right, lads. I'm going to wrap it up there because we've got 20 seconds to go until we're 90 minutes into this. Andy gave up. He'd been interested about 15 minutes ago. He's too busy practicing the shots for tomorrow's golf.
What time is it, lads?
He's looking up Notion stuff. Notions websites.
I see Oxlade Chamberlain's having a baby. Fair play to him. I'm onto my fourth at this stage, so a big deal. But fair play to them. It's great. Yeah. Hopefully that improves.
And Alison's baby.
And Alison had a baby, which is great to see. So
I
was great.
I worry about our players when they have babies, their first babies, especially.
Yeah.
Well, not that the players have a baby, so that'd be obviously very sore. But when they
because it's not sore for women.
Well, I don't know. Sorry, claim.
He made it so far.
The lawyers are on them.
But
how many isms did we break tonight?
Yeah, it's an absolute game changer when a baby arrives in the gaff. Like I wish them well.
Yeah, it is. And my missus will be giving out sting to me now in a few minutes as well. So it's she's trying to get some sleep, being considerably pregnant at this moment of time. Yeah. So it's right. That has been the forum. That has been Andy Young. That has been Peter Smith, and that's down here. That is the commander in chief, Gavin Doyle. He's off to try figure out things now on his new computer.
New computer's 4 weeks away. Four weeks to play Warzone, and then my life is over.
You have to do pew pew now, are you?
Pew pew for 4 weeks, and then my life is over. Genuinely,
excellent stuff. Yeah. Great stuff. Right. So that's been the show. That's been the forum. Don't forget, Mass Effect the Remastered Edition is out on May the 14th. Good night. God bless.
Summer's coming, Washington, D.C., and so are pesky mosquitoes. Don't let mosquitoes ruin your backyard fun. Call your local True Green experts for True Green Mosquito Defense. This science-based treatment will help control mosquitoes in your yard within 24 hours and keep your family and pets comfortable all season long. Save 50% on your first mosquito service by visiting truegreen.com/summer or call 877-629-0092. Say goodbye to mosquitoes and hello to the perfect outdoor space for summer. Call True Green today.
15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
Oh, that's a cheer we used to do in softball.
What? It's actually Geico.
Whenever someone hit a triple, we would wave our bats and yell, 15 minutes could save you 15% or more. But we never got to use it because we would only hit home runs. Annoying.
The phrase is from Geico because they help save people money.
Geico? Yeah, they were our team sponsor.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
Sports Social Podcast Network.